On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, I'm here with Ben Chadwick of the Boston Red Sox organization. Ben, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
As you said, my name's Ben Chadwick. I went to UMass Amherst, came out of college. I did a couple internships, notably with South Carolina football and at Mike Boyle's, and ended up linking up with the Red Sox, and I am going into my eighth season now, second in AAA. I'm the AAA strength and conditioning coach here.
So before we get going, I have to say this, man, that you've been on quite a few of the group ones, and you've been with me since day one of this podcast. Like, literally one of the two sample episodes that we recorded was with you. So thank you for helping me along the 5 years and supporting me with this. But also, this is very long overdue since you're literally like the first or second episode I ever recorded. So thank you for your support along the way before we get going with this.
Thanks for getting me on. Thanks for the exposure.
Yeah, man. It's like I said, it's long overdue, but I think it's, like you said the other day, I think this is probably the right time since it's been 5 years of me bugging you to do it. So. So let's kick it off right away, man. What is your best professional baseball story? Either something you look back on and laugh at or smile at, or just sticks out the most over your 8 years so far?
So I was thinking about this a lot the last couple nights, and feel like there's a lot of ones that are rated R and you can't really say on the podcast. A good one that pops up, if people go back and listen to the winter ball episode when there were a couple thousand people running on the field in Venezuela, but I kind of wanted a fresh one. So a good one I had when I was working rookie ball, anybody who's been in the GCL, you play Monday to Saturday and then Sundays are off. And there used to be a curfew for the players on Saturday nights, just to keep, they're usually younger high school age kids or a little bit older, and they have a curfew to keep them from going out. And there's creative ways to kind of police it, just room checks or just asking hotel security to like let them know if they see a guy out or whatever. And one of my favorites, my rookie ball manager, Tom Kochman, hired a girl to sit in the lobby with a baseball and a Sharpie. And any guy that came back after the curfew, she asked this attractive girl to ask the guys for their autograph. And guys obviously were going to sign for the girl. And they'd go back to their room. And then the next week we got in, and every single guy who signed the baseball ended up getting fined or whatever, or put on like morning towel duty, whatever it was. And that was just one of Koch has a ton of stories, but that one takes the cake.
That's actually incredible. I've never heard that story in all the years that we've been friends. I've never told that story.
It's a really good one.
And very genius play. So if anybody listening wants to steal it for their young kids on curfew, that might be a good play.
Anyone listening to this podcast in baseball who's had Jeff Bandy, you know there's about 6,000 stories there that I'm sure everybody could go down, but
yes,
I'm gonna keep those off the podcast.
I might have separate plans in the future for a podcast just with Jeff Bandy for his stories.
Need to.
So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
This is another one I had to think about for a while too. I had a few different answers for years when I came on this podcast I thought I'd say, but I think the one I've gone down the rabbit hole of most recently is probably personality typing. A couple years ago, I read Conscious Coaching by Brett Bartholomew. Kind of exposed me to a lot of the personality typing systems. It's very surface level in the book, like the Big Five, Myers-Briggs, some of the other ones. And I just thought it was super fascinating, some of the stuff, and people get caught like thinking how they think and assuming others think the same way as you. People are obviously extremely different. So I think the further I got into personality typing, the more it's really helped me grow as a coach, especially as you get up to higher levels and you get older players making a lot of different salaries and they have a lot of different personalities, ideas, thoughts on training. And like, if I were going to give examples how it helps me as a coach, like, I think if you overlay, if you took like the big five and you overlay like agreeableness and conscientiousness, like how agreeable someone is with other people and how hard of a worker they are, you can learn a lot about them. So for example, like if someone's a hard worker and they're agreeable, like those are your workhorses. Like they're going to do whatever you say and they're going to do it hard. If someone's like, if someone's agreeable, but they're not as much of a hard worker to themselves, like they're going to be obligers and they're going to do whatever you say, but they might not have intent or purpose behind what they're doing. If someone's a hard worker, but they're not agreeable, like to connect with a guy like that, you're going to need to really explain why they need to do something. And if you can explain why enough that it breaks their routine, they're going to be like, yeah, that makes sense for me. I need to incorporate that. And if someone's worst case scenario, not high in either one, like you're going to need to almost trick the person into doing something, like almost explain to them why they can't do something to make them do that particular thing, if that makes sense. And I think other personality dimensions matter: extroversion, introversion, how much a guy's going to want to talk about it. Things like openness. If a guy's really open, he's going to want to try new things. If a guy's not open, like he's going to want to stick to the same exercises. Like I think the more you learn about the different things and the more you can bucket guys, and I try to bucket guys without them ever knowing that I actually do this in my head. But I think the more you can learn people on a deeper level, the better off you are, because I think everybody starts off coaching people how they themselves want to be coached. And I think there's so many different unique coaching strategies to get guys to do what you want them to do, that it's like this whole untapped area that isn't like the traditional measurables or the traditional strength and conditioning things you learn about.
Okay, I want to dive down this for a bit, because this is definitely a different type of answer than what I'm used to getting with this. So let's start right away. You say big five. Like, okay, what are the big five?
So the big five, there's a lot of personality typing systems. The big five is the most researched and validated one that a lot of research goes back to. And a lot of them actually overlap if you learn multiple systems. The easiest way to remember the big five is the acronym OCEAN. So OCEAN, O is openness. So openness is your openness to experience and how willing you are to try new things. C is conscientiousness. To summarize that, it's basically how hard of a worker you are, or how likely are you to judge things in certain situations. E is extroversion, introversion. That one's kind of self-explanatory, how social you are, how willing you are to explore your world versus how quiet or how much you'd rather just stay in and stay with your own thoughts. A is agreeableness. This is kind of your interactions with other people, whether you're a thinker or a feeler, I guess is the easiest way to explain it. And N is neuroticism. So that's basically your tendency to experience negative emotion. So being high in neuroticism would make you a more anxious person, or being low would make you just a more go with the flow, even keeled person.
Okay, so you said you bucket guys and you don't do it in front of them, which is something I was thinking. Like, do you openly discuss this with guys ever? Like, are there any certain types that you are like, hey, you know, I've been looking into personality typing, like, look at this guy, he's kind of this, 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 and this is how I approach him? Or do you just keep this to yourself?
I think it's more of a niche type thing. Like, I might do it if I'm trying to figure a guy out with another person, but I think for the most part, I don't have like a list where I write everybody's personalities down. I kind of have buckets in my head. And I think the most important ones for coaching are agreeableness and conscientiousness. And if anyone's read the book, The Four Tendencies, like that book was a game changer for me. And that's where that book talks about how if you find upholder, you can bucket guys into being upholders, obligers, questioners, or rebels. And that's like my basic buckets for how I think about getting guys to do things. And once I read the book, it doesn't lay this out in the book, but I realized it's kind of overlapping conscientiousness and agreeableness, like how much you're willing to do things for other people and how much you're willing to do things for yourself. So I think that's just, if I ask myself two questions, like, does this person like doing things for other people? And is this person who does things for themselves? Like, that's my baseline. And then I can think about a few other things, like if they're extrovert or introverted, if they like to talk to you or not, or if they're open and like new exercises and variety, or if they're not open and they like just stable routine-based things, then I think that's kind of your baseline for just figuring out a guy out fairly quickly.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think one of the good things that you said is like when you first start coaching, you just coach how you want to be coached, or like the way you were coached makes the most sense to you. Like the way I grew up, my dad was very like, you know, hard nosed, no nonsense, like very discipline oriented. So I myself am that kind of person. And then you get to pro ball and then it's like, I need to coach everybody like this, right? Like you need to do this, you need to do that. And then like, it'll literally drive you crazy if that's the only way you coach, because there are people who are like, they don't really care about the weight room, or they don't really care about whether they start in front of the line or behind the line. And that might piss off a ton of coaches that are listening, yeah. But like pro ball is just different, right? Like sometimes getting guys to just do something is a big win, where some guys are like so locked in, so behind the lines, on the timer, like you can use a whistle if you want, and they're like locked in. And then other guys, like if you pull that whistle out, I literally walk away from this drill, right? Like there's extreme ends of the spectrum and everybody else that falls in between. And I think for me, that was a really hard lesson to learn, was like, I would beat myself up over like, why aren't these guys listening to me? Why aren't they disciplined? Like, why don't they want to work hard? It's like, it's not that, it's just, they do put that energy towards like baseball. Like if you watch them in the cage, or you watch them taking ground balls, or you watch them on the mound, like they're totally different than like if they come out for a conditioning drill or in the weight room. It's like, it took me a long time to figure that out for myself. And so anybody listening, like I would advise kind of diving into this kind of stuff, especially if you're going to get into pro ball, just the way that you have to the way you have to navigate conversations with people in the game is very different than just like everybody gets on the line and it's no nonsense and you blow the whistle and they all start on time, finish on time type of deal, you know?
Yeah. No, it really is like, you said not manipulation, but it really is like a positive form of manipulation almost. Like you're using it for the right reasons, but you got to meet guys where they're at and understand like what their connection strategy is and who they are as a person. And like kind of what you said, like when you got into baseball, like you were this hard-nosed guy because that's how your dad was on you. That's who you were when you were little. And I think if you're to stereotype a strength coach, like a lot of us are hard workers who just didn't make it in sports because we kept following a passion and kept wanting to get into sports, and we were hard workers and lifting or conditioning or whatever, like this field is what we became passionate about and drove us to doing this. But not every person's like that. Some people are naturally talented or like just found different pathways to success. And like those guys require different connection strategies. And if you can't figure those out, like it's going to be very hard for you to work with every guy on your roster. Everyone's still got those guys you can't figure out or that are just tough. Like those guys aren't going to go away. But I think the more guys you can learn how to connect with, the better you're going to be as a coach.
Yeah, I think it's Joe Ken that calls it the social chameleon, right? Like you have to be able to just blend into different conversations and talk to guys. And I think one of the big things I've been on this year is like knowing who the guy is and trying to be ahead of him, right? Like I know that this person has this lift today. I know that sometimes he drags his feet, so I know if I don't see this guy by this time, I'm gonna have to go get him.
Yeah.
Or you know, this guy has this on his day four, I'm gonna put these out so that they're ready for him whenever he comes, right? And there, like you said, there are some guys that like you can't figure out still, and it's very frustrating, right? Like they're wild card types. And that's okay. It keeps you on your toes. But to your point, I think the more people that you can connect with positively, let's say in the clubhouse, because that's our specific environment, it's like the guys that are on the fence will start coming to you because they see the other guys interacting with you, right? Like if the superstar players or the high level players are coming to you and interacting with you positively, the other guys that are kind of on the fence see that and they're like, all right, if this guy trusts this guy, I think I can too. And then that builds you some buy-in from those guys as well. But if you can't have those conversations with those certain people, then the other guys can be like, you know, that guy doesn't trust him. So I'm going to bypass that guy as well. Have you seen that?
Yeah. I think obviously it's most extreme at the big league level, but I think AAA, you get a lot of those veterans and there's a wide range of like org guys and guys with a ton of time that played for a lot of teams. And I think both years I've been in AAA more so than any other level. Like I've realized there's going to be an older guy with more time that's almost like a clubhouse politician. He might be one of the louder voices, and like reeling that guy in and having that guy bought in like really polices everything else for you. If I'm sure that that's pretty much what you just explained on your end too, right?
Yeah, I would agree 100%. I can very specifically remember a guy when I was in AAA. We've talked about him many times. And when he left, the whole dynamic in the clubhouse changed, especially for me, because he would help me just police the guys, like you said. And then he was gone and it was like, all right, who's going to take over as the leader? And everybody kind of just looked at each other like, I don't know, you know? So it's like you said, I think it's a little bit more extreme in the big league level, but even AAA, like there's plenty of like diversity and a mix of different experiences and everything, like you said, that make it a very unique place to kind of interact and kind of walk around and not be on eggshells, but like you really have to understand, you know, who's in the room at what time and, you know, how much time there is before the game and who likes to lift this way and who likes to do that. You shouldn't be in this guy's way. Like it's a very fine dance and it's fun. Like for me, that's one of the big, big challenges every day. It's like, I know these three guys might line up at the same time. And I know this guy is this type, this guy is this way. And this guy's, how can I get all three of them to effectively work? Right. Like I'll give you an example. We have a bunch of younger kids coming up this year, you know, making their debuts, first time in a major league clubhouse. And part of it for me is like, I'm taking these kids under my wing on the strength and conditioning side. And like, hey, did you ask if you could change the music? Oh, no, it's fine. All right, if you say so, let's see what happens here. You know what I mean? Like you're trying to teach them the same thing that you're trying to learn, right? It's like how to be interacting in the clubhouse in an acceptable way, still showing respect to the veterans, but still getting their work done, right? So, and you're kind of trying to teach them some of that social awareness as well. Because it's all new to them, you know, and they don't know what they don't know. And if nobody teaches them, like, they're just never going to know.
Yeah. And I think that's huge. That's something I think I'm doing a lot better in my second year than my first year is. Like, first year, last year in AAA was an adjustment period for me, too. And, like, this year, I think I can go a step further. And I think about, like, my job's not just strength and conditioning. It's, like, teaching guys how to be when they make it to the big league. So like those guys that don't have a lot of time, like teaching them things like seniority with music and teaching them things like if you're going to lift after the game, like the appropriate way to do it, how to communicate with your strength coach and let them know when you're coming or what you want to do for a lift rather than just going rogue or doing your own thing or showing up at the wrong times. Like, those things are just as important as getting guys to work and do what we need from a strength and conditioning perspective. Because if I let them know and it kind of goes in one ear and out the other, like that guy's going to learn from the wrong people once he makes it to the big leagues. And it's better hearing it from me and getting that tuned out now than it will be if they get on the table at the wrong time at the big league level or something like that. So that's the way I kind of look at like extra layers of my job that I didn't really recognize in the past.
Yeah. I mean, you've heard me say it a million times to our staff, right? Like obviously your main job is strength and conditioning, but as you said, one of the layers is preparing the players to be to be really good, at least on the strength and conditioning side, at the next level, right? Like, your job is to make the person above you's job easier when that person comes to the next level, right? If it's a low A guy going to high A, he shouldn't cause more problems for the high A guy, at least in the weight room, right? And then the higher they go, the more obligations they have. They have media things to do. There's more pressure from the game, you know, all of that stuff. So, like, if, for me, it's a win if a guy comes to us and he has a good routine, he's locked in on strength and conditioning, he understands all of that stuff. The other things we may not be able to help them with, right? Like, we're not going to be able to help them with interviews and media stuff and, you know, like taking care of business on the field. Like, that's other people's job. But at least on the strength and conditioning side, like, that's another layer of the job. And the higher they go, the more the stakes are, right? Like, if you're in low A and you go to high A and you make some sort of mistake, strength and conditioning wise, like, you show up late, or like you said, you change the music or something, it's like, okay, that's, you know, it's high A. But once you get up into double A, triple A, the big leagues, like, that, those missteps can be really detrimental for guys, because it, like, if you cross over a veteran or whatever, like, it can really have some negative effects. Just how those relationships are with guys. And then it can really kind of take a wrong turn in the clubhouse. Like, it may seem small and insignificant at the start, but it could really end up becoming something. So that is a really valuable thing to be able to do.
Yeah. And early on, I think sometimes it almost makes you like the bad guy, but I think as guys, if you can explain the why behind it enough to make guys be like, oh, that makes sense. I think as you're around longer and guys that were once the young guys start becoming the older guys, I think they start seeing like, oh, that's how I was acting, or like they understand what the purpose is, like, once they're older and can look back at, oh, like, this all makes sense now.
Yeah, I think the other thing too that probably needs to be mentioned is, like, if the message is the same level to level, it makes it easier, right? Like, I know there are things you have told guys, and then when they come to the big leagues, they ask us and we're like, yeah, that's right. Like, that's the thing he's supposed to tell you. And they're like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? But if they came to us and be like, what is he talking about? That's totally different. Then it's like, it loses you credibility with the players and everything. But as soon as they come, it's like, and the thing is, you can tell them till you're blue in the face, and sometimes they might not listen, but as soon as they get here and we tell them the same thing, and it like clicks, like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So that shouldn't be lost in the conversation either. The message does have to be the same level to level to make it run effectively and efficiently.
Yep.
So, all right, talk to me about success, man. You're a strength and conditioning coach of the year in AAA. What is it that makes a strength and conditioning coach successful?
For me, I think this one can be a tough one to answer, because I think there's a lot of different ways that a strength coach can be successful. There's a lot of different personalities that end up being great strength coaches. There's a lot of different areas within strength and conditioning that people are strong or weak in that make them unique coaches. I think if you're thinking principle-based, I think everyone's got to have a process. I think you should track what you do and reflect on your results. So I think, like, having a process, a routine, something you, like, every day I listen to like some sort of relevant podcast to get my mind right about our field. Like, I have a set of articles, like Duolingo streak. Like, I think the only person in the world with a longer Duolingo streak than me right now is you by about 2000 days. but like doing things that every day, you know, you need to be consistent with. And those are my own things off the field. But when I get to the field, like making sure the supplement towel is straight, like weight room set, cards are where they need to be. Every player has a card ready. Having a checklist of all the things me and Jordan, my assistant, need to do to make sure every day goes smooth without any hiccups or anything. Like a weekly process. I know what I need to do, what my deadlines are for everything every day, like what I need to do biweekly, what I need to do monthly. Finding a way so that there's checks and balances for everything. Tracking what you do. Like, I think the more you keep track of things that are important, keyword important, you don't want to track too much because then you're going to overwhelm yourself. But if you track what's important, like player attendance with lifts or like something related to yourself, like it feeds into the next one, like reflecting on results. Like you can look back and say, like, this player needs to be better at this. I need to be better at that. And I think just your overall process and constantly questioning things, like, what do I need to change to my systems to make everything better? Or what am I missing? I think ultimately those are the more you can be reflective on yourself, the better off you're going to be as a coach.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you know, I have like my checklist of daily things to do away from the field with Spanish practice and other things like that, listening to the podcast. I mean, I'm in the same boat there. And then, like you said, when you get to the field, like being able to minimize, I mean, we're all going to make mistakes, right? But like minimizing the mistakes that happen. And I think minimizing the mistakes that happen in front of players, right? Like if you have a solid plan and you have to adjust to an alternate plan and you go to that alternate plan, the player might not know the difference, but to you, like, you know, okay, I couldn't execute plan A, but I did have plan B. It's not as good, but the player may not know it, where versus like player shows up and he's like, all right, I'm doing this today. And like, you're completely caught off guard. Like it goes back to the point we had from the previous one, like trying to be ahead of the guys so that when they come in, things are ready for them. Like you said, have the lifting cards out, or if you know what the lift is for the day, like having things set up for them. Like if we have a, you know, if we have a banded squat day or a banded trap bar day, like when the guys walk in, like the bars are already set up for them. You know what I mean? So that they're like, cause you know, you're going to say, hey, you got trap bar deadlift or you got hex bar deadlift, whatever you call it. And they're like, what's that? And you can just point and say, you're going to be right there. But if you don't have it set up, you're like, you know, this thing right here. And you're like, like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? Like just being ahead of them, I think really does help you a lot with the players. And then as they see that from you and you're consistent with that, like they expect that from you. And then it's kind of funny. Like if the one day you fall behind or you miss something, they're like, dude, what happened? You're not, what's going on today? You all right? It's probably a good problem to have that you've noticed my one day of not consistency or whatever. But yeah, I think, like you said, being consistent and having some checks and balances, like tracking things and actually like assessing them. I think one of the things that's really hard for people is to self-assess and like self-evaluate and like genuinely just black and white. Hey, this is good. This is not good. But I think if you can do that, that's a major key for me. It's like how you can progress yourself. Like, I am not a bad person. I just made a mistake today. You know what I mean? Like it's nothing personal. It's just today I made this mistake, right?
How did I not have the collagen out an hour and 45 minutes?
Sometimes it goes a little bit over the top, but yeah,
I know what I mean. I think something that we both probably bucket with, like having our processes is something that like makes us successful, like pushes us to be better coaches, makes us better day to day. But remembering too, like something that, like I can be too rigid sometimes, like personality dimension of conscientiousness, when you're really high in something, like one of the negatives of that, there's positives and negatives of every dimension. So like I at times can be overly rigid. So sometimes I have to remind myself, I need to take a step back. Like I need to understand not everyone's like me. Like sometimes it's okay to deviate from my routine a little bit to try to be in the moment a little bit more, or like, it's okay if I use a streak freeze for a day and Duolingo so that like I can focus on something else related to my job or even my personal life, because ultimately like you don't want to get too overly stuck in doing things one way. Or like a player might come in and be like, eh, I don't want to do this block today. Like, can we do something else? And it's like, you got to be adaptable and adjustable to figure out how to keep that guy working and do something that's going to help him, even if it's not exactly within the confines of your program or what you're used to them doing.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, if you have a plan A and a plan B, and for certain guys, you might need a plan C too. Like, and you know, sometimes it's as easy as putting it on them. Like, hey, which kind of cardio choice do you want to do today? You want to hop on bike, elliptical, you want to run on the treadmill, like which one do you want to do? And then they're like, I'm going to go run outside. And you're like, okay. They just throw you another curveball. But
yeah,
no, I agree 100%, man. There has to be the best that I've been around have some sort of plan. They have a second plan that they can kind of audible to, but like you said, they live in the moment and they're able to adjust on the fly if they need to. And they're just people, you know what I mean? Like, they're good at just interacting with other people. And then at the end of the day, you sit down, you assess the day, and you make a plan for the next day. And I think for me, that's been a really, like a really big blessing, just coming into the big leagues and having Kiyoshi to mentor me. Obviously, you know, Yosh, and I think probably everybody in the world of strength and conditioning and professional baseball knows Kiyoshi. You know what I mean? It's like every team we play, there's somebody from the other side waving at him, you know, players, coaches. Yeah. It's like that he's very respected, and he's very respected for a reason, because he's good. He's good at talking with people. He's good at interacting. He's, like we said, social chameleon. Like, he knows who's in the room. He knows how to interact with them. And then every night we sit down, we make a plan for the next day. We try to execute the plan the best we can, and then we sit down and we go over how everything went. We get ready for the next day. And I think for me, it's been really good to have him to kind of guide me in my first couple of years in the big leagues. And I think, like I said, I've been trying to take some of the young kids under my wing and teach them. And I think he did the same for me, and he still does every day. So it's like, it's just good to have somebody that you're around. And I would assume having an assistant this year for you does help you to have some of those conversations instead of just talking with yourself at the end of the day. Like, you have somebody else that you can actually get some feedback from while teaching him as well.
Yeah, I feel like just having a person there, like, Jordan contributes a lot of really good ideas. Sometimes there's days where he just gives me somebody to talk to out loud, and I'll just come to solutions that I wasn't thinking about just from saying things to another person. Like, having another person there, or having support staff, like, for a lot of people in the minor leagues, like, I'm blessed to have an assistant this year. Never had one before. And like, for a lot of us, like, that person's like your AT, or like maybe one of the skill coaches. Like, having that person to bounce things off is huge. And going off the other thing you're saying, yeah, like, I feel like strength coaches become like, we almost, when guys come in and like throw you that curveball, like, we become a series of if then questions and statements. And like, you have this question web flow chart in your head, and you follow it down, and usually you can figure out a way to get the guy to do something that's part of the plan. And every now and then you have this guy that breaks the flow chart, and you're like, all right, I got to figure this out right now.
100%.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part one of this two-part interview with Ben. I hope you enjoyed this one. This was a pretty cool one to get into. Obviously, as I mentioned at the beginning, he was literally the first or second sample episode I made when this all began. And 5 years later, I finally got him on. He's a really smart guy. We're really good friends. We talk shop all the time. And it was cool to dive into more of the personality typing and some of the additional layers of being a strength and conditioning coach in pro ball, and not just the X's and O's type of stuff. Three things that I took from Ben in this episode: make positive connections with more players to ultimately make you a better coach, explain the why to help players understand the purpose of what you're doing, and track what you do and reflect on your results. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.